Welcome to the ESA Show of Entrepreneurship and Regional Development Podcasts. Each publication in our journal is a great opportunity to share significant and audacious contributions to a larger audience. My guests today are Urie Yeros from De Montfort University and Sibel Osashir-Kachar from Red Butte University. They recently published an article entitled Power Engagement in Migrant Women's Entrepreneurship. They co-authored this paper with Patricio Osorio. It has been published in Entrepreneurship and Regional Development, a journal edited by Taylor and Francis. Urie, Sibel, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Vincent.
Can you tell us, what is the origin of your paper and why did you decide to address this particular topic? And what is the question you aim to answer?
Maybe I can start. We've been working with the migrant women entrepreneurs for more than a decade now. During our work with them, realized that actually they engage with power relations in many different ways, in very distinctive and varied ways. Whereas when we turn to the literature about the migrant women entrepreneurship, literature tells so many different stories about women's engagement with power. But we realize that actually these stories, these theoretical narratives in research do not represent what they experience with. So we wanted to actually bring this varied ways of their engagement to the life. That was a kind of motivation that we've been doing research. One of us, I do mostly, especially in this paper, the data from Sweden and also the data from Netherlands that the Sibel have been working with the migrant women entrepreneurs. So also we have been coming together at times at conferences, so we've been having this discussion among ourselves and see that there is this discrepancy going on between the theory and between the experiences of migrant women entrepreneurs. And then when we consider the far-reaching implications of how migrant women's entrepreneurship is being portrayed in terms of power relations, we're a little bit concerned about that, to be honest. At times, we were even a bit angry. So we just wanted to picture a bit of a more rounded and a nuanced picture of women's engagement, migrant women's engagement with power. So we wanted to answer the question of how do migrant women entrepreneurs experience and manage different modalities of power in advancing their entrepreneurial projects. I think that's from my point of view that I can answer this question that way. Sibel, do you have anything to add?
I think you explained wonderfully. Something that I could add, actually, maybe when we realized that discrepancy, we also struggled a bit to find a language to be able to explain this. I think this was also our, in a way, like triggered us to find a way. Okay, we see this in practice with women's experiences and also coming from those regions like myself as also a migrant woman, not an entrepreneur myself, but like being really familiar with the context. But also reading the literature, because we do study the literature and we also contribute to that literature as well. So that was also the issue. Okay, how can we explain this? And I think maybe we need to also emphasize here the importance of experiential and embedded point of view of the critical feminist scholarship actually brought us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you identify the one, maybe two, key contribution of your paper that you believe will have the most impact on the field?
Yeah, I think Sibel just started.
That's a good question. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, maybe to start with, we introduced the concept of power agility. I think this is very much relevant when we challenge framing of power as something possessive, right? Either you have it or not, but like really realizing that there are different modalities. It could be like power over when women resist to the imposed structures on them, or power to when they really individually enact, but power with, like really collectively mobilize and use power in that sense with others. It's more like relational aspects rather than like really possessive aspects. So I think power agility is one of the key contributions of our paper, where it becomes like frames power as an emergent and dynamic construct rather than a fixed parameter. And the second one, I think, related to what I started explaining with the critical feminist scholarship, that we realize that, okay, we need to take it from the experiential point of view. And when we do that, we were able to recognize that these women are like special in certain senses, and special in the terms of that they recognize social suffering because they have double or multiple seeing capacity that they developed over the years between different worlds. So they could able to make a critique of power. So they really realize this social sufferings. And this, of course, helped them also constructing the entrepreneurial opportunities. And not only for their individual or familial benefits, those beyond these motives, also for their communities as well. So they were really able to see when structural environment falls short and how they can, like, by doing this critique of power, how they can really use their power and create entrepreneurial opportunities. This is also the transformative potential that we realized and try to emphasize, and think that this is really like one of the key contributions of the paper. I don't know. I see these two points, but Julia, do you have anything to add to this?
I think you've been explaining very well, but one thing maybe that the core to our struggle of conceptualization of power and also the concept that we developed through the experiences or attending to experiences of women is that understanding of power in a more positive and more, I would say, generative way, yes, rather than, yes, a very negative way. And also, it's not, as you said, in the power agility, the women entrepreneurs actually build this as a skill.
Yes.
As an embodied skill. Over the time that they deal with the power relations, they develop this as an ability. So it's not a one-off thing, and it's not an episodic thing that we wanted to highlight, and it's a very positive and generative thing. And I agree with you regarding that their critique of power has become the source of entrepreneurial opportunities. And I think we're going to see this probably not only in migrant women entrepreneurs. This is just an empirical context. But we believe that many disadvantaged groups that experience this because of their marginalization, this social suffering, and then entrepreneurial opportunities get, I would say, perhaps created because of this, not despite of this. In literature, it was more of a portrayal of this experience of marginalization as despite of this. But we tried to tell, or we tried to actually emphasize the point that, no, that's a source of recognizing and creating entrepreneurial opportunities.
What was for you the main theoretical and methodological challenge or challenging in addressing such a question?
I think one of the biggest problem that we have had, we just mentioned about the conceptualization of power and how to actually articulate the experiences of women and putting them into a very coherent narrative. But before that, to be able to find a language to speak through or to speak from. The current theories, unfortunately, didn't help us explain what was going on. In the first submission, we were aware of it. We were not really comfortable with the way that we could put everything into the paper. We know that we were saying something important, significant, according to us, but we nevertheless were aware that we were not speaking the language that is nicely capturing the experiences of women. So after the first review, that was very apparent. After the first review, we have had wonderful reviews and really solid and very thought-provoking. So it took us a couple of months, actually, to be able to answer these questions. But we needed to go back to the literature again, to the feminist literature, because we were very lightly using, I think, the feminist approach. And then we just started to engage more with the critical feminist theory and then theorizing from the experience that we actually found very suitable what we need to do in this paper. So that was the first and the biggest challenge, according to me. Sibel, would you like to have anything to add?
Yeah, you mentioned from a theoretical point of view, that was indeed a challenge. Maybe what I can mention from a methodological point of view, I think it was the really, because we collected life stories, so these are like really embodied experiences of women, but it was a big challenge to really have this in a narrative format, to really respect to their experiences and to be able to tease these experiences out to make it visible that it is coming from the experiences and from experiential point of view. I think that was a kind of difficult thing to do. And also having two contexts, right? Because there are the contextual dynamics, of course, influencing the relations of women with power and how they enact power. But also we do not want to just compare and contrast these contexts, but we want to see also, or to make it visible, that this concept of power agility and modalities of power actually running through different contexts as well. So it was also a bit of a challenge in the way how to present this, that it is not a ubiquitous thing that is everywhere, but it still takes the contextual dynamics into account, but visible enough that we can see across contexts. I think here maybe we also need to emphasize our third author, who is not unfortunately be able to join us today, but Patricio helped us a lot. I think also like the reviewers, because he is not in the specifically coming from the migrant woman entrepreneurship field, so also not familiar with the context of Sweden and the Netherlands as we were, he really asks nice questions just to be able to understand and also to contribute to the formation of the paper. But this helped us also a lot in that respect. Hurriye?
Yes, I think we found ourselves explaining our reasoning and experiences. It was very natural to us. That wasn't natural to him. That wasn't obvious to him. So I think that even this exercise, trying to explain how we see things, how we try to put things into the paper or ideas, I think he helped. He contributed so much. That was one of the ways that I think that we could navigate our theoretical, but also the methodological challenges in this paper. So, yeah, we were lucky. I think we had a good team that we complemented each other.
Indeed, yeah, I agree.
Let's talk about the research process itself. Can you share something about the journey, perhaps a turning point during data collection, a difficult decision you had to make about the research design, or even a moment of doubt? Any surprise or counterintuitive result, something that made you rethink your initial assumptions?
Yeah, I think, as I mentioned a little bit, I think second reviewer, you know, this phenomenon, I think our reviewers just pushed us really to find our theoretical home. That was our, I would say, biggest joy, but also biggest challenge, I would say, that we needed to really make difficult decisions around applying the right theories. And the theories that we are applying, like a critical feminist theory, critical theory itself, is a grand theory. In order to bring those into entrepreneurship field, the social theories, that was quite a challenge as well. But I think it was by heart that we also, I identify myself as a feminist. So for me, it was a challenge, but also it was a great joy, I think, to tide these waves. But the second thing I would say, maybe not very usual when we are talking about this academic production, which is very heavy and intensive teaching, that I needed to involve Sibel and Patricio as well. And so we needed to work during the weekends and very unusual times at nights, etc. Apart from the content of the research process, we believe that the research process really includes this work-life balance. People put it in a very abstract way for our experiences, I think, showed us that should be really the intimate part of the research process, and we even should talk about it. So, I think that was the biggest challenge in our process. What do you think, Sibel?
Of course, I agree what you have said, especially with limited research time, unfortunately. Of course, we scholars, I somewhat idealist people, right? So we do it anyway. So we find time. So maybe it shouldn't be the case. But we recognize, I think, during the process, that is what I would like to emphasize, how we are also, integrating research, life, teaching. So these are not segregated, at least maybe because we are also parents as well. For instance, in one case, we were just working and my daughter just came in and she helped us with one word that we were struggling to find out. And then we also used Rubius on laptop when we need it. So it was like really, and we recognize this during the process. And I know that most of the time these go to the acknowledgement part of the paper, but we discussed with Julia, of course, and Patricio as well, that, okay, can we do something about this? Should we emphasize this, make it more apparent, like really, really acknowledge? And we were also lucky in that respect. Our editor, Ula, also supported us in that sense. And we really put that point in the paper, not in the acknowledgement part, but in the paper, that we really wanted to recognize the effort, which is beyond our team, beyond our time, but are also family members' time as well. I think I can talk about the process in that sense.
And also, I think we made each other a little bit aware of how our taking for granted routines are not so routine or should not be so routinized. Sivan mentioned that my son, actually, I needed to borrow a computer of my son, and he was just playing with his computer. And he came to me, said that, Mom, that you just told me that you needed it half an hour, but it's been like 2 hours. Can you please give me my computer back? For me, that was quite a normal thing to do. But Sivan alerted me, oh my goodness, that's not so normal if my daughter would have been in this situation. So you know that we routinize things in the work and the life balance, etc. But also the time zones, right? If I just mentioned the time zones, this is a new phenomenon as well, maybe. Patricio being in Chile, we are being in Europe in different time zones, at the UK, Netherlands. I think that was also a little bit of a challenge to arrange time. So because we needed to also spare time to discuss a lot. Maybe it doesn't happen at every paper, but in this paper, we really needed to spend so much time having long discussions about everything that to put into a paper. So, but at the end of the day, I think we were able to say everything that we wanted to say, right?
I'm pretty satisfied in that sense. Yeah.
If you could go back to the beginning of this project, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently and what advice would you give to other scholars embarking on similar research?
It's a difficult one.
It's a difficult one, yeah.
Yeah, what would you say, Julia, if you go back and...
I would say perhaps we involved women entrepreneurs into our research project. They've been really, it's like a quasi-theoreticians, and also several cycles that we send our writings to them. We have discussions with them over this process. But I think we could have involved them into our research even more. I think that would have been something that I really wanted to do much more systematically and maybe much more regularly, as you know, part of that naturally that it was coming from our research. But maybe for this specific paper, we could have done that in a much more structured way, maybe, right? Yeah, and apart from that.
I realized during the process, because the question also asks about when you go back at the beginning, and I think I can also advise this to all the qualitative scholars, because of the dynamics, also the emphasis given more to different methodologies, I felt that we should be more brave enough to really bring those in-depth insights and looking at the experiences as really seeing embodied experiences is difficult. So I think we need to be bold enough, brave enough to really go deeper. And I would definitely think that we might have brought more feelings, more like bodily reactions. So I think this could be something that I can also advise to all qualitative scholars, especially who are willing to take this feminist angle. I think this is what the literature also needs. This is, yeah, how I believe and how I also get to understand at the end of this project.
Yeah, yes, I think it is probably much, we spent so much effort in methodological part, of course, but I think we could have taken it even further, for example, looking into their silences, looking into their bodily gestures, made a video recording, etc., participating into the meetings. And we participated into many meetings that they invited us, but nevertheless, we only use our own senses. We haven't used any technology, or we didn't give a much more special, I would say, attention to their embodied features involved in that through their experiences. Yeah, I agree with you.
I would like to also add, because this is an advice to the scholars, find a team that you can really discuss things, that you can really improve yourself with knowledge, with different theories. I think with this project, I understood the importance of teamwork. Like really, because initially it was very time consuming because we had to discuss a lot. We were also not, because of the lack of the theoretical angle at the beginning, but I think having this right team, a well-balanced team who are really on board, it's not like taking turns. So of course, different projects think all differently, but I think with this project, this was one of the most enjoyable things that I could have the discussions, the rich discussions. I think that's really important. And find your team that kind of really develops yourself, your insights. Yeah,
exactly. Find your people, right? It's really important. I think it's the most important thing, to be honest. I mean, everything can be done. And unless you're working alone on your own, I think it's so important to be able to, think together, to talk together and write together. I think that's not so easy. I think the best thing comes from working together with like-minded people. Yeah, I agree with you, Sven. Yeah, and I think what is, maybe it's not an answer to your question, but I would like to iterate one more time that I think everyone should be doing what they like doing. I think at that point, for example, I'm so happy to see that I did what I really like to say. I think it's a source of joy. The research process is what makes me keep going. Lots of challenges happening, I think, for all of us. But at the end of the day, if, we do something that we really like, I think that's really the most important, I think the most awarding, maybe the prize.
I agree.
I think everyone should do what they like.
Thanks a lot, Aurier. Thanks, Sibel, for participating in our show and for pulling back the curtain on your research process on your article entitled Power Engagement in Migrant Women's Entrepreneurship. All our podcasts are available on entrepreneurship-erd.com and on the main podcast platforms.